101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app, Mike and McCarty, and on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Director of the Downtown Authority, former Mayor Cedric Glover joining us. Mayor, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. Good morning, Aaron.
Morning.
Thank you for jumping on with us. You released a statement yesterday. Basically, you are going to increase the reward for any of these people. Tell us about the statement you released yesterday.
Well, we want to, first of all, let the folks that we're teamed with, the Shreveport Police Department, all of the other public safety folks involved, know just how much we appreciate the unprecedented cooperation that we're seeing downtown right now. We're getting out of our silos. We met as recent as last Wednesday to talk about the upcoming weekend. You've got the DDA working with the police, working with Oak Connections, working with CADA's Mobile Crisis Center, and just an interconnected network of folks who all realize that we're all in this together. And so in light of what happened over the weekend, we wanted to make it clear that downtown is everyone's neighborhood, no matter where you're from, city or region. It's the common ground that we all share. That makes it a special place. And so in light of what transpired, we want to send a special and specific message that if you come to our common ground, our common neighborhood, that there's an expectation that you behave yourself. And if you don't, there's a price to pay.
Mayor, we had an incident back in the spring where there were people killed downtown in front of a local club. And you guys all got together and issued a statement then saying that, and I'm quoting now, additional officers will now be stationed in two critical areas from 10 p.m. to 3 a.m. The patrols are meant to increase visibility, deter criminal activity, and provide a sense of security. Was that just temporary, or are we still doing that?
Well, you need to be aware that for this particular weekend, and that's part of the reason as to why, in terms of the planning and the lead up to all of this, the expectation was that 200th Street would not be an area of focus or priority because the two most popular establishments in that location were closed and not open. And so there was no direct activity coming from them. One recently experienced a fire, and simply the other did not have an event for that night. Now, had they been open, then you would have seen in the case of Hayes, there would have been the retaining of those two police cars at the club owner's expense to be stationed in that area. But those establishments were closed Halloween night this past weekend. And so the expectation that you would end up seeing any sort of significant activity gathering in that area was unexpected and unanticipated. The folks saw involved in this incident did not come from any establishment within the 200 block of Texas Street. They came from other areas of downtown. And so you had assets deployed in places where you thought the potential problems would develop. When they did develop, then you saw, as Chris Bordelon has detailed, an effective response that came from SPD.
Are we doing as good a job as we can with someone at the real-time crime center monitoring those cameras and looking to see when a crowd is starting to build and sending in help? Can we do a better job there?
Well, those are discussions that we had as recent as last Wednesday, talking specifically about the need, especially during specific hours, that we end up with someone, because right now you have, I think, 2 to 3 people who are manning the entirety of the city at the real-time crime center. We believe, based on those discussions, that it would be wise to be able to figure out how on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and other events and occasions where we know there's going to be a high crowd, potential for a high crowd, that we end up with a dedicated staff person whose only job is specifically looking at and patrolling and being aware of those things that happen within the central district.
Former Mayor Cedric Glover, DDA Director, what does the City Council do to address this and make sure it doesn't happen again?
Well, we're going to encourage them to be solution-oriented. I mean, everybody can identify what the problems are. Our focus is going to be how do we get to the solutions, and also how do we try and stay away from the hyperbole, because, you know, there is a lot of wonderful, positive, potential field things that are happening within our downtown. Mm-hmm. And while we know that, you know, we have to be always right if we want to keep these things from ever happening, it only takes one particular instance for something to happen of this nature for it to end up basically casting a whole lot of positive things that are happening throughout the width and breadth of downtown. I mean, the Capri Theater is back open. I mean, for God's sake, mm-hmm. you know, we've got $110 million state investment that's taking place. We've got, you know, an out-of-town mogul who wants to come and invest in our downtown. So, I mean, there are lots of positive things that are happening. We need to stay focused on that. We're going to be solution-focused. We're going to be truthful and transparent in terms of saying, you know, that there's probably a resource deficit that at some point there needs to be a serious conversation about. If we actually expect to be able to address the problem, it's kind of like playing football. You can't continue to send out inferior athletes against great athletes and expect to win. So at some point, we know that there's some serious discussions that need to take place about staffing, about manpower, and what have you, that we've got to be solution-focused and just simply not continue to point fingers.
Okay, was that a Saints reference? Just wondering.
That hurt. But, yeah.
You're talking to a Cowboys fan who just saw his Cowboys lose to the Cardinals last night. So.
Not a good night.
Cedric the Mayor, when he spoke to us earlier, said he kind of floated the idea of going back to closing the bars and establishments at 2 a.m. How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm not sure, given the nature of our entertainment district right now, and in fact, you know, if you want to point a finger at the person who's responsible for that, it's yours truly. As a city council member back in the 90s when the riverboats came, and the arguments that came from Randy Davids and other folks in the Riverfront and Merchants Association was that if the boats are open 24 hours a day, at least give us a chance to be able to compete and connect. One of the things that we discovered with that was that in terms of that 24-hour work cycle, one of the most popular times was for those folks getting off the late shift at the boats, that you ended up with those folks coming in at hours that ended up being in the middle of the morning, and that was kind of their happy hour for the day. So, I think that's something that's worth additional discussion. Nothing at this point needs to be off the table. So we'll engage that discussion, hopefully give it a historic perspective in terms of how we got to this point and try and figure out what's best to do going forward.
There's lots of comments on my message board, so I'm going to have to ask you. The bar owners sit on your DDA board. I believe there may be one now. And some of the bars that they own may be a part of the problem and that they should be held more accountable. How do you feel about that? Are they responsible for what's happening outside of their bars, or should they be?
I mean, I think both of those folks have been very proactive in addressing the issues that have been a part of downtown. You know, one's no longer on the board. One still is. As I mentioned, that particular establishment was not open this past weekend since March of this year. Anytime they are open, they are paying for at their expense. Two uniformed police officers with vehicles to be stationed in front. And had they been opened on Halloween night, which we maybe should have hoped that they were, then those vehicles would have been there. And so, again, I know it's easy to point fingers, and it's always convenient to do so, but we're going to do so from an informed perspective and not just simply what we believe or perceive.
Now, this is not your first rodeo as mayor. You know these crowds often, okay, you beef up forces downtown. All right, they're going to the Frisbee Golf Course. They're going to Ford Park. They're going to move. This is a citywide problem when you have a group of kids who are looking for something to do, and then they act out. They cause problems.
Well, these aren't all just kids looking for something to do.
You're absolutely right. But
not only are they all not kids, one of the things that we discovered, especially back in the Greenwood Juella days, or Crenshaw and Slauson, as they called it, mm-hmm. was that the vast majority of them were folks who were not even from the city of Shreveport.
Oh.
They're people who come to Shreveport from the outlying areas where they can't do or certainly don't feel comfortable doing the kinds of things that they come to Shreveport and do. And so that was one of the reasons as to why, you know, we felt the willingness to be able to set a high standard, because the last thing that we want are folks who are not a part of this community coming here and viewing it as the place where they can let their head down and do the kind of things that would not be acceptable in their home communities. And so if it's not acceptable where you're from, then it's not acceptable to come and do in the city of Shreveport.
Cedric, can you hold with us for just a moment? Because I've got another question I want to ask, but we got to take a break. DDA Director Cedric Glover, Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM. We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back. 710 Key.
Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Director Cedric Glover on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Micah McCarty. Cedric, we know Curtis Jackson in the past has said he hates the Ratchet City moniker. He wants Shreveport to change their attitude. Have you heard from him or any of his people about this, about what's going on with his huge investment in downtown Shreveport?
Not specifically, but as you've seen in one of the local newspapers, that he's continuing to move forward with his vision for Commerce Street, with for the Dome. Obviously, we're working in conjunction with the city to address the challenges with the flooding at the studio, and then focused on the initial efforts that will end up coming out of the former stage work. So obviously, this is nothing that he would want to see happening in the midst of these types of investments. It's one of the things that's going to have to be a mantra that makes its way all the way down to every element and level within this community, that if you want to see positive things happening in Shreveport in general, and downtown in particular, then these things are going to have to be just simply unacceptable. We're going to set that standard, and if you engage in it, then we're going to find some place to put you that's not with the rest of us.
Now, if he got involved in something like this, would he have an impact within that community?
Well, you know, I think the one thing that is obviously a true statement, that for a man who comes from the areas of New York where he is from, and the life that he's led, and the things that he's been involved in as a younger man, and the full circle that his life has made, he knows how to speak with and connect with people at every level. Obviously, he knows how to discuss finance with the best, mm-hmm. But he also understands how to discuss neighborhood beef with individuals as well, and how to be able to effectively and proactively engage and resolve those things. And so, you know, that's a welcome element that we look to being able to mobilize as a part of this effort. And, you know, and it's going to be a message that's going to be direct. And you've got a lot of the young people within this community who understand and see this as well, and don't agree and support that which happened. They see it to be an absolute threat to the potential that's unfolding within downtown, and we're going to be encouraging and enlisting them to work with us to help us figure out how to, you know, completely address and consistently address the problem as well.
What do you say, Cedric Glover, to the folks who say repeatedly, this would never happen in Bossier? Bossier would not tolerate this kind of behavior. What's the difference? Why is it not tolerated there, but somehow it happens here?
Well, I mean, obviously, there's a different history in terms of understanding that you also have to be professional and respectful, and the idea that you go back to. I mean, what do you hear most often, Aaron, when people want to address these types of things? I remember back in my years as a council member and dealing with the things that were going on in the 80s and the 90s, my tenure as mayor, you know, you have people in this community who want to go back to a day and a time when you had folks like George Dortois who could go and get on a horse and ride in the neighborhoods with people who were unlike them and simply do things that did not respect the law or rights or our standing as citizens. And so for those folks who believe that that's the way that you address these types of issues and challenges, we're just simply going to disagree because we don't think that that's the way in which you build an effective community.
Cedric, you made a comment a moment ago that said these clubs were closed. Why were dozens and dozens of people downtown on the sidewalks around these businesses if they weren't even open?
Well, now, Mike, that's a question you have to ask them. But certainly the 1010 had a fire and Hayes was not open.
Hmm.
Interesting.
It appears the Red River District is attractive for folks who...
But now also understand, you do have other clubs within the downtown area beyond those two within the 200 block of Texas Street. Mm-hmm. And so those individuals may have been there any other number of places mm-hmm. throughout the year, or because it was Halloween night, they just may have simply been assembling in downtown with the expectation that this would be the happening place to be.
Thank you, former Mayor Cedric Glover, DDA Director. Appreciate your time.
Thank you all so much for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Alvin Oliver, president of the local NAACP, spoke with us earlier this morning. Hear what he has to say in his take on this coming up in about 10 minutes. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, City Council had their meeting yesterday. special called meeting to address the violence that took place over the weekend in downtown Shreveport. You watched the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I watched a lot of it. It went on for hours.
Mm-hmm. High praise for Council Chairwoman Tabitha Taylor from me. Yeah.
Well, and what did I tell you this morning?
Mm-hmm. She did a good job.
She did a good job.
She did. Going to hear a piece of that next.
Yeah, we've got a piece of that council meeting opened by Council Chairperson Tabitha Taylor. Mm-hmm. We're going to play a little bit of that right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel, and on the free Kiel app.
Now, breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Shreveport City Council held a special called meeting yesterday morning, 10 a.m. By the way, council chambers packed.
You bet.
Citizens, business owners, mm-hmm. City officials, of course. I say reporters. Even one of the council members said, this needs to be packed like this every other Tuesday.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. People can't afford the time away from their jobs and right. their work. To see that big old crowd at 10 a.m. in the morning
yes.
was awesome. I mean, really.
And when they got started, they finally got started. Tabitha Taylor, being council chairperson, opened the proceedings.
Mm-hmm.
And Aaron, the more she went on, I thought she did a good job.
I was impressed. Totally impressed.
She did a good job.
I was like, where's this woman been?
Yes.
She was strong. She was direct.
She wasn't condescending. She wasn't defensive. She Mm-mm. wasn't accusatory. Not that I heard.
Hugely impressed. I was hugely impressed.
Yes.
Did I think I'd be saying that on the radio today? No.
So we I think we're fair.
Yeah.
And so kudos where kudos is deserved.
Absolutely.
And good job.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there was a lot, not her overall, there was a lot of hyperbole. There was a lot sure. of pontification.
Right.
We have to do better. Well, yeah, but I didn't hear anybody bring solutions. They did talk about closing the bars.
Mm-hmm.
At 2 a.m.
Right.
That shouldn't even be a question. That should be the first thing they do. That's, I'm sorry, bar owners, but that's, no.
I wonder if they do that because some of the bar owners are some council members' friends and one of the council members owns some bars. So do they do that?
Well, that's like asking Congress to go, no more personal trading
yeah.
on the stock market while you're in office.
Right.
And then let them vote on that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That'll happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But we did pull a little bit from yesterday's council meeting. Here's Tabitha Taylor opening up yesterday's special called City Council meeting.
This is Shreveport. And what happens in Shreveport when we work as a collective body is that we get things done. And so we want to cancel out false narratives, but what we want to do is to ensure that we build a stronger Shreveport, Louisiana. And we cannot do that if we are divided. We hear your concerns. That's why we're here. We hear your concerns, not what people want to perpetuate, but also know that when you see what you saw this weekend, it causes you to lose a measure of hope. I am here. I live here. This council lives here. We have children here. We want you to have a safe Shreveport. And it doesn't matter that if you go out at 10 o'clock or if it matters if you go out at 8 o'clock a.m., whatever time that you leave and go anywhere in Shreveport, we do not want you to have a fear of going anywhere in our city. And so what do we need to do? We need to see where we went wrong and correct it. We need to work together collectively to build. We have $110 million investment in downtown thus far that is going to trickle down to our neighboring communities. So what we're looking at today, so understand fully that we are here because of you, not because of lip service, not because we want to have a social media like, not because we're trying to aid and assist in somebody's radio post. It's because you had a fear, you had a concern, you care, and you are here because you give a damn about Shreveport, Louisiana. And this is where we're looking and where we're going. So with that being said, I know that there will be comments and there will be strong comments. And understand that we felt that. We felt all of that because we shared the anger. We shared the frustration. We did the yelling and the screaming that y'all couldn't hear. But we're here because we're going to come to a resolve, because we're going to change the narrative right now. Shreveport has national attention, not because of what you think, because of that video. We have national attention because of Max Chambers, who is a teenager right now that is sitting before a national audience singing his little heart out, exercising his gift. And what do you think that those artists are going to do? They're going to Google Shreveport, Louisiana. So we have to decide what we want the narrative to be.
You know, it's very disheartening to see what we all witnessed. And, you know, a lot of comments that I've seen and calls that I've had and Facebook posts and being tagged in Facebook is, this is nothing new. You're right, it isn't. And it's been going on way too long. I will tell you that this council in particular, since we were elected in 2018, myself and Reverend Green were elected, we have really tried to make strides with the police department and with equipment and everything that we can do to try to help with this. Our real-time crime center is up and running. Is it up to par? Not quite yet, but just think about where we've come in the last 2 years under the mayor's direction and the council funding a lot of what's going on with the real-time crime center. But there's got to be something that changes the hearts of these individuals that are doing this. I'm prayerful that this meeting will help. I'm prayerful that the prayers from the churches and the business owners and the homeowners and the club owners, that we can get this under control. Because if not, I've said it and I really stand by this, Shreveport's dead if we don't get this situation under control. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Councilwoman Bowman.
Good morning, everyone. I'm here today because I care. I'm here because we need a resolve. We need to figure out what we need to do. I'm here because I want the chief of police to know I'm in full support of anything you need. Whatever help you need, let us know. If we need to call the sheriff's office to help, if we need to call whomever, I'm not opposed to anything, but right now we do know if we want a vibrant downtown, we need help. And I'm here, whatever the chief needs. I want to tell the police, thank you for what you do every day, because it's not an easy job. If you look at some of these videos, it's really disheartening. So the main problem is not everyone that's in this room, y'all were not fighting downtown. But thank you for coming because you care. We need this chamber full every other Tuesday, giving us ideas and letting us know what you see that we don't see. So thank you, and I'm here to listen, and the tools we get, I welcome them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be brief. Is that, you know, we listen to our constituents, as you well know. And my constituents are police officers, law enforcement, first responders. They have voices. They have concerns over what has happened. They're not happy. They're very concerned on where they are in their strength. Their strength equals their safety. And so this council has always been on the front lines, the tip of the spear, to ensure that our officers, every law enforcement officer, our first responders get the tools that they need, the modern electronics, whatever is necessary. I think our goal here is to have open, honest, respectful dialogue. Because we can resolve this. We have to decide what we want Shreveport to look like and how we're going to get there.
Thank you.
A pastor told me once that a man that harms another man doesn't have a problem with that man. He has a problem with God. Because if we love God, regardless of the faith that we profess, then we're not going to hurt each other. And we've gone off the rails here and there over a quarter over our history, but we can get back. And I'm not saying that prayer is going to do everything. God wants us to actually get in the trenches and do things for ourselves. Okay, you know, prayer is necessary. Don't get me wrong. We're going to pray our way out of this, but we're going to pray our way out of this in the name of Jesus, and we're going to pray our way out of this in the name of action. So I do appreciate everything that y'all have done for us, the encouragement, the emails, the text messages, your willingness to come forward and give us your voice, because that's really what matters. You know, we are here as your liaison to exercise your voices, and we're here to make sure that you have a safe environment to live, play, and work in. And that's been our goal from day one since I came on this council, and I don't see anything changing. So I do appreciate your willingness to come forward, and your willingness to hang out with us on a Tuesday when you could be other places. And again, we are Shreveport, and this is going to be a collaborative effort. And as long as we're honest, as long as we're respectful, and as long as that we're open, you know, we'll get this solved. Thank you very much.
Councilman Brooks.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Downtown Shreveport is my district. I'm going to guess that I spend more time downtown at night than any other council member, possibly all of them put together. Councilman Taliaferro is right. I think, of course, we all need prayer, but that ship has sailed for some of these people. We have to have some type of enforcement. I don't know what the answer is. Sheriff, city marshal, overtime, maybe get some people out of their office, officers that work 8-to-5 jobs, and have them on the street at night. But the videos are terrible. Nobody's going to want to go downtown. At some point, it's going to affect the casinos, all of the restaurants and nightclubs. And then eventually, probably the businesses that are there during the day will move out. So we're here to try to figure out the answers. I don't necessarily have them. I don't know that anybody does. I'll say something Councilman Butcher didn't want to say. We're 158 officers short. So they are stressed. They're strained. So we have bought, I think, every piece of equipment the chief has asked us to, technology-wise. I don't know if that's enough. I think we're here today to start trying to figure out how we don't have another video like we've seen the last 2 or 3 weekends. Thank you.
Mayor Arsenault, you have any statements?
Yes, I want to thank all the members of the public that are here. I want to thank you, Madam Chair, for your remarks. We are here to solve a problem. We're not here to point fingers at each other. Mm-hmm. We are here to solve an issue, and we together will solve it. The activity that we saw is unacceptable. Whether we need additional legislation, whether we need additional manpower, whatever we need, we're going to resolve this issue. And we're going to make sure that people not only are safe downtown, but perceive that they are safe.
Back with McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Big election yesterday, Mikey Poo.
Yes, it was. And it could be discouraging. But yeah. But there's two things that I kept telling myself. Mm-hmm. One, off-year elections always favor the party out of power.
Right, right.
That's historically true. And two, Aaron, these are deep blue states. Yeah, in cities.
Absolutely. They absolutely
Is it a
were.
Surprise that the Democrats won in deep blue states? What ought to be more of a surprise is that Cittarelli did as well as he did.
Mm-hmm. But the margins really, really were bigger than some expected in many of them. What we're waiting now is next year when we do get to the congressional elections and the off-year congressional elections, which right now, I mean, if you listen to all the talking heads, they're like, Trump's in trouble. This could swing the tide, that Mike Johnson's days as speaker are numbered, that, you know, we will have Hakeem Jeffries. You know, we'll see. But California's going to have probably five more Democratic seats. Five more congressional
seats. That's what blows my mind, is that people are falling for this crap. People are voting. Aaron, they now have a communist Muslim mayor in New York City.
I'm seeing pieces where big business, rich folks in New York are already, you know, called in the moving companies.
Mass exodus is about to happen. Governor Abbott in Texas goes, well, if you come here, get prepared to pay. Mm-hmm. Prepare a penalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't want your New York politics down here.
It's gonna be a big change for New York City, and I don't think they really understand what's coming. I don't think
they do. No, of course they don't. If you see interviews of these 24-year-olds, why are you voting for Mondami? Well, he's the obvious choice.
Yeah.
Why is he the obvious choice?
He's going to lower my rent. No, he's not. No, he's not. It's not
you
happening.
You think you're going to get all this free stuff?
When he raises taxes on the rich, guess who they pass it on to, folks?
Yeah, exactly.
We all pay it.
Tax the rich. Tax corporations. You morons.
Thank you.
Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser joining us after the news, top of the hour. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 KEEL. FM 710 KEEL. Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser joining us. Lieutenant Governor, good morning.
Good morning, my friends. How y'all doing?
Well, we're doing wonderfully. Mm-hmm. I hope it's as pretty there as it is here this morning. But you've got some really exciting news going on for the state of Louisiana, including Journey Awards. Tell us what the Journey Awards are and why this is important for our tourism.
Yeah, it is a well-respected publication based out of the UK that gives out awards for tourism. And Louisiana won the best state of the year. New Orleans was awarded best food city. And then we were also awarded the new tourism initiative for the Amtrak Mardi Gras service through Mississippi and Alabama along the coast. Louisiana got more awards than any other state in London at these awards last week. So great recognition for our state. And that State of the Year award is really special because of all of the convention and visitor groups around the state that work with us on bringing travelers, not just to the big cities, but all over the state. We work very closely with Stacy there in Shreveport-Bossier, all of the partners around the state to make sure we get travelers to see every part of Louisiana.
We got even more good news. The new report from the Michelin Restaurant Guide, they now have a new report for just the South, and Louisiana pretty prominent on this. This was cool. What'd you hear in all that?
Well, yeah, that's a game changer because, you know, we are a food state. And people come here to eat. So to be recognized finally by Michelin is going to, a lot of people travel just to go to the Michelin star or Michelin recognized restaurants. And this is a 3-year initiative. This is the first round of announcements. Emeralds, Saint Germain, and a few other restaurants, mainly in the New Orleans area. But over the next 3 years, it will spread out across Louisiana and recognizing those great restaurants with Michelin stars, but also great places to stop and eat, not just the Michelin stars, or any recognition. And there's a whole list of them from around the state that will be recognized. So another great thing that will help us in our toolbox for getting visitors to come visit Louisiana.
And if I remember correctly, Emeralds got 2 Michelin stars, mm-hmm. didn't they?
Yeah, that's pretty significant. Usually you got to work up to that. So that was great coming out the box. It's going to be great for Louisiana to have this recognition and be in the Michelin Guide, something we never had before.
Now, you just got back from New York City. Thank goodness you got out of there before it started going really it's going to go real crazy here, at least now. But you visited the James Beard House. Tell us about your trip to New York City and why you were there.
It's always been crazy, but it's going to get a lot crazier. You're right. we were there. We had a Louisiana table at the James Beard House. We brought Chef John Foles and cooked a multi-course meal for all of the media people up there. Was a great event. The night before that, we had chefs from all over Louisiana. They had a table, and we invited all the media in to try food from all over Louisiana to write about the great restaurants and places to visit in Louisiana. We really knocked it out the park. It got a lot of recognition, a lot of press, and just another great way to close out our year promoting food in Louisiana. So a lot of great partners around the state did a great job there, and really excited about that trip and what it's going to mean for people coming to eat in Louisiana.
And for those that aren't familiar, tell us what the James Beard House is and why this is so important.
Yeah, that's the, I mean, you get to go eat at that place. It was very limited. We had travel writers at each table. It was limited to 40 people, took up the whole house, but that's a legend in food and culinary leaders. So it's a real special treat to be able to go there and actually have our Louisiana John Falls cook at that house. So it was a special treat. And what better way to close out our year of food than this year's Rose Parade, which the theme is teamwork. And we decided it takes a great team to build a pot of gumbo, from the crops we grow in the field to the crawfish, to the seafood, to the chefs, to all the spices that are produced in Louisiana. And we're going to have a shrimp boat on the front of that boat. All the different products are going to be made out of flowers. And we're going to have a pelican store in that big gumbo pot. Mm-hmm. Commissioner Mike Strain and his wife will ride on the float. But more importantly, we'll have a satellite truck in the den as we're building that float, giving interviews all over the world. And Mike will be able to talk about all the great farmers and products we produce here in Louisiana and why it's important to make that great food we make. So what a great way to close out the year at that parade, talking about all the food. You know, that is one of the best things we do for tourism. There's 700,000 people over a 5-mile route for that parade. It's viewed by billions. I think our earnings from media is up to around $50 million for that event. And at the end of the year, when you're talking about where we're going to go next year on vacation, what a way to promote Louisiana. John Foster, American Idol runner-up, will be performing. So it's going to be another great way to close out the year in promoting Louisiana.
Speaking of the Rose Parade, I don't know if you're following our guy, Max Chambers, the little 14-year-old on The Voice. He won the Mic Drop Award this week, the first one, and all the winners of the Mic Drop Awards have a chance to ride in the Rose Parade. So we could have another Louisiana featured guest in the Rose Parade right here from Shreveport, a fabulous young singer. Unbelievable, huh?
It is. My wife played me his video this morning, and I was blown away that young man, the talent he has. And so when it's time to vote, we need all Louisianans to vote, because that mic drop, whoever gets the most votes, is going to ride in the Rose Parade. It's another great ambassador for Louisiana. I tell people there's something in the soil or the crawfish juice that grows so much talent in Louisiana, because we just keep producing incredible talent. And that's why the arts programs with music in schools is so important, to make sure every kid gets that opportunity to explore and grow those talents, because we sure do grow them here in Louisiana.
Did I see on your list of things you wanted to talk about congressional maps? Did I really see that on there?
Well, I tell you what I did. I wrote an op-ed before this last special session to the paper about open primary. And nothing gets done in Washington. And you know, we've got to get where we move in the state and the country forward. And, you know, we closed the primary for this election next year. There's a lot of confusion.
Yep.
So it cost, I think, $20 million extra. And a lot of people don't know it. 73% of Louisianans want open primary. So I hope we can go back to open primary, but I hope more importantly, other states will follow the lead. And if we have open primary in Washington, they got to compromise. Look, there's Democrats that want to open the country back up. They just can't vote for it because they'll get primaried out.
Well, want to open the borders, yes.
I mean, you know, they want to vote to open the government back up, but if you do, you'll get primaried out. Look, I've got lieutenant governor friends that are Democrats that have a lot of beliefs I have, but they said, Billy, if I say anything, I'll get primaried out. Mm-hmm. People should, all the people of Louisiana should elect our leaders and not one party or the other, because then it makes you jump off the cliff to the left or the right, and that rhetoric is leading to a lot of these killings and things. We need to tone it down, and one way to do that is open primary, where we all got to compromise and do what's best for the greater good of the people.
We do, and we're watching what California did yesterday, five more Democratic seats.
More gerrymandering.
The divisiveness in this country, we got to end this, Billy. We really do.
And open primary will do that, because you won't worry about you got to get elected by everybody. If you're in a Republican district, about 10% of the people turn out to vote for you. You get the nominee, then nobody goes to vote because it's a Republican district. And so our Republican state, if you've got to run an open primary, you got to speak to the greater good of all the people. And on both sides of the aisle, it's best for Louisiana. And listen, we've been open primary for many years. My father built the Republican Party on open primary. So it's something that we really need to relook at after this next election. You know, a lot of people believe it was closed to punish Bill Cassidy. Well, he's got to run in a primary. But hopefully after this next election, we can go back to the open primary so everybody gets a vote, a voice in our elections.
Lieutenant Governor Billy Nungesser, look, thank you so much. We appreciate your time.
Always, my friend. Have a great week. Enjoy this weather.
You too, sir. Thank you. Coming up, we are going to go over that. Speaking of open primaries, the last night's off year elections that did not go well for if you're a Republican, but don't panic. It's all going to be fine. Scott Hughes going to join us at 7:40. 101.7 FM, 710 KEO, Mike and McCarty.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KEO.
Yeah, I started watching the city council meeting, the special call meeting yesterday morning at about 10.
Mm-hmm.
But then I had to get... to work. I had some things that I had to do, and I checked back in to see, and Aaron, like an hour later, they were still going. In fact, Chief Smith was addressing the council.
Mm-hmm.
I did hear some of the comments, I wanted to say listener comments, some of the citizen comments, but Chief Smith was boy, he was up there a long time.
He was. And one thing stood out
for me. He's going to join us later this morning, by the way.
He is in the
8 o'clock mm-hmm. hour.
One thing that stood out for me was, and it was kind of glaring, was a question that was specifically asked by Councilman Gary Brooks.
Where was the command bus for Halloween?
Where was it for Halloween?
Yeah.
It was in the garage.
Any reason?
No, sir.
You didn't expect Halloween night to be busy in the clubs?
No, sir.
You did not.
When you look at the film, you see that it wasn't. My assumption was not incorrect. Halloween night is busy throughout the community. It generally makes no difference.
Halloween night is the second busiest night in the club business for adults.
So we didn't see it downtown.
And they have shown the real-time crime center video from above.
If you look from overhead, it wasn't as crowded as it looks on the street level.
On the videos, absolutely. And we do need to point out, too, and the chief will tell us this next hour, that the first call about downtown, the fighting, came to the police department from the real-time crime center.
Right.
They're the ones who called. And then they, I believe, got some calls from some motorists who were there. So somebody at the real-time crime center, despite what folks have said, we may have even said it, they were watching it. They were keeping an eye on it, and as the crowd started to grow, they called police and said, hey, we've got a problem. here at Texas and Spring. We need officers there ASAP.
The first emergency call was received approximately 1 minute after the altercation began, making their response time roughly 2.5 minutes.
Yep. And the chief said, we're going to now be more aggressive. But here's what he also said. When we do this, you're going to hear about it, and you need to have our back. Because when police start moving in and arresting people, and, you know, if they have to be rough, they have to be rough. And then people whine and cry about it. Oh, you were too, oh, you were over, you were, oh, you know, you abused your power.
Right.
Then people whine about it. He said, we can't have that.
We have to do our jobs. Aaron, policing is not pretty.
No. And sometimes it looks mean and it looks hostile. That's how it is. We have to be sure we have the police departments back when they start to take back control of our city. We can't be whining.
Scott Hughes is going to join us in about 10 minutes talking about last night's election. Micah McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport political analyst Scott Hughes joining us just after the break talking about last night's election. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back to the big stories of the day with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Oh, wait a minute. I wanted to start off by going, gloom, despair, and agony on me. Deep, dark depression.
What drugs are you on?
Oh, you don't want to know. Scott Hughes joining us from... Scott, you're in Baton Rouge?
Or on the set of Hee Haw. I'm not sure what's going on.
Thank you for getting the reference.
Okay, I missed it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm in Baton Rouge today. I'm actually parked looking at the state capitol, one of the most beautiful buildings in the country, and a great setting to talk about politics.
Look at that. Absolutely. Very nice of you to drive all the way down there just to talk to us about last night's election. But look, there's people that are probably panicking right now. Did not go well if you're a Republican. Democrats are going to claim it was a stellar night.
Well, it all depends on your perspective. So I'll give you two different versions of it. Politics 101, fairly simple look at last night. Not much there. These are all blue states. What did you expect? You're going to elect Democratic governors and a mayor of New York in Democratic states.
Exactly what I said.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And that's politics 101. Now, if you want to go politics 400 and go a little deeper, yeah, you should probably be panicked. It may be the canary in the coal mine. Let's break down those real quick. In New Jersey, the Republican candidate did worse than they've ever done. The margin opened up in New Jersey, which probably means when we look at the post-election analysis, Republicans lost a very important voter block, Hispanics. That's what you were watching in New Jersey. In Virginia, not only did Republicans win Virginia, which is not surprising, they won all the statewide offices, including dragging across the finish line a very controversial attorney general candidate. They swept the board. But look deeper in Virginia. Democrats picked up 13 seats in the Virginia legislature, and now they hold a supermajority in the Virginia legislature. Every county in Virginia moved blue at least 4 or 5 points to the left.
Scott, one other thing I want to mention too that is astonishing is the turnout. Did I see that there were 2 million voters in New York City, the highest number in 40 years?
Correct. I was just about to mention, New York's New York, and so I'm not going to sit here and defend the outcome in New York, except to say two things. Number one, the most electable candidate got elected. Mm-hmm. Whether people want to say he's a communist, he's this, he's a socialist, he was the most electable candidate. He won the race that matters, the Democratic primary, closed primaries. Closed primaries can be dangerous. We see why here in New York. But the real key in New York is what you said, Aaron. It wasn't that Mondani won. That's not a surprise. The surprise is over 2 million people
people voted. They haven't had that many votes since 1969.
Wow.
And it was, so it's the energy. It's the who came out to vote. Again, politics 400. That's dangerous if you're a Republican. That's energy on a Democratic side. Let me give you three more, that, and then we'll talk about California, that people may not have noticed. People are going, oh, that's just blue states, Scott. No, there was some that some of us were watching deeply. In Georgia, Democrats won two statewide public service commission seats. First time in two decades, Democrats have been elected on the state public service commission. That's Georgia. In Pennsylvania, the legislature was trying to rub out three Democratic Supreme Court judges. They passed some legislation. I don't know exactly the ins and outs of it, to term limit them out, etc. Well, there was a ballot initiative to allow the three current justices to stay on the court. That won. Pennsylvania voters, 2-1, 66-33, said we're going to keep these three Democratic Supreme Court justices. And then maybe the most stunning, and no one's going to really have noticed it, over in Mississippi, very red Mississippi, there were three state Senate seats that flipped, including beating some Republicans in Mississippi. Mm-hmm. And now, don't get me wrong, the Republicans still have a majority in the Mississippi legislature, but this broke the supermajority in the Mississippi legislature.
Okay.
So this wasn't just a good day for Democrats. This was an alarming surge that may be happening underneath. And then we have California.
Okay, we'll get to that in a minute. But let me ask you this, which everybody is warning about in the spring when we have our elections, our midterms, and we have Senator Cassidy, you know, trying to hold on to his seat. There are other congressional races up for grabs. Does Mike Johnson, does Donald Trump, are alarm bells going off for them because of this surge of voters and the possible wave?
Well, I'm going to go to Politics 400 on this one and say yes. All you had to see last night to know where the damage really is hitting home was really the one post or tweet that Donald Trump put out last night, where he basically said, this happened because I am not on the ballot, meaning Mr. Trump, President Trump, and because of the shutdown, the Republican shutdown. And so, now again, people are going to scream at me, but that's what the president posted last night. That was his way of explaining what took place, that this happened because he wasn't on the ballot, and that because the Congress is shut down, thus saying the Republicans are taking the hit for that. And what's important to note, looking downstream, is the president will never be on the ballot again unless he runs for senator in Florida or somewhere. But he will not be on the ballot next spring at the midterms. And I think we all know in the midterms, the party not in power always tends to have a structural advantage. That's just the way Americans vote. But this is starting to look like they may have a deeply rooted voter angst out there that will come back. I saw one pundit last night say that what you may have seen last night is, and this is a high-level comment, everybody understands it, is what you may have seen last night is Republicans may not have shifted the electorate to the right. They may have rented the electorate in 2024. We saw a lot of those voter bases come back to the Democratic side last night. Now, we'll see what happens next year. It's a year away, and anything can change in a year in politics.
Now, go back to California and Prop 50.
California Prop 50, no surprise. I think, Aaron, I texted you yesterday when you asked me to come on. I always like to give you my predictions and my percentages. And I think I hit the percentage almost on the nail that California was going to win. What's amazing in California is there's a lot of finger pointing, because many of us that watched this did not think there was a problem in passing Prop 50. It was the number we were looking for, and it went over 60%, which again shows that there wasn't much opposition. The people in California wanted to do the five seats. And I know we're going to hear the term gerrymandering, but it's hard to say it's gerrymandering when the people voted to do it. Other states, Texas started this by not giving the people the vote. Their legislature just redrew the districts, which is the law. Legislatures can draw those districts. But in California, you now have the zing to Texas's, you know, zang. You have the zigzag. You have the reaction. And so California is going to block Texas. But what I would watch for, and what a lot of analysts now will look at, is California could show a danger to what the Republicans are doing to redistricting, because a lot of the redistricting, let's take Texas, a lot of that redistricting is built upon the premise that they will hold the 24 voting block, particularly Hispanics in Texas. If they lose Hispanics, like they did up in New Jersey, then that redistricting in Texas could turn out to be a disaster. It could turn out to not gain them five new seats. It could turn out losing them seats in a purplish state. Texas is not a deep red state. It's purplish. Oklahoma is a deep red state. Arkansas is a deep red state. Texas is purplish, and if they start playing the numbers too close, they could risk losing seats, not gaining them.
Yeah,
the Democrats
will
gain five seats in California.
When you factor in Dallas and how liberal Dallas is, and of course we know Austin and that area, I see there's some purple in there.
Definitely.
Yeah, the problem when you start stretching districts, I'll go there. When you start stretching districts to try to make your voter block go farther, yes, you've gained a new district you have a chance in, but you've also weakened the other district you pulled those voters from. And if you do, and if you don't hold your voter base, which in Texas is going to be Hispanic voters, it's going to be moderate Republicans. If you don't hold that base, you could be in trouble. But overall, a very good night. No way to look at it otherwise for the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
Concerning. I'm not going to sing the hee-haw song, Mike, but it is concerning. I think a lot of Republicans, consultants will go to work. The golden ticket for the Republicans is the Mondani election. I think they're going to try to make the mayor of New York the face of the party. They're going to try to point out that this is the new party. I don't think Mondani is as much the face of the party. Gavin Newsom's probably going to become that now with the California result.
Okay.
But they will try to peg that on the Democrats.
Mike Johnson calls you today. Are his days as Speaker of the House numbered? What do you tell him if he asks you that?
Well, I would tell him what I would have told him a year ago. I think his days as Speaker were numbered a year ago when they barely won the House by a couple of votes. Because I know history. I know the midterms were already a wave potentially against the party in power. When you only have a 1-5 vote margin, depending on the day of the week, yes, I would have thought his speakership was already in jeopardy. After last night, I think it's going to be very – I'm not saying they can't hold the House, but it's going to be very difficult. After last night, Democratic strategists will start looking at the Senate. It was that big of a wave that if we could, if they can move the – I say we, if the American people move the voting block to the left a little bit, which seems like what they've done, then that's going to put the Senate in play, where most people like me have said the Senate was safe for Republicans next fall. There may be some chances for the Democrats now in the Senate. I think they still hold the Senate. Mm. But the House is likely going to shift now.
Mm.
Scott Hughes, thank you so much. I know you're busy this morning. We appreciate you taking the time to talk to us about this.
Anytime, guys. Appreciate the show, and I appreciate the downtown conversation. Hopefully that's something we can work on locally. All politics is local, and that's the most important issue in Shreveport is our safety.
I agree.
And we'll be talking more about that coming up after 8 with Chief Wayne Smith in studio to talk to us about what's going on for the plan downtown.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back with more of Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Oh, I love it. Comments on the Shreveport Security Systems message board. That's funny.
I got this one for Scott. Scott is absolutely completely wrong. Blue states voting for blue elected officials is nothing new. And that's,
you
said that.
And that's what I said. And yeah. Okay, if I'm not using the correct term, it's an off-year election, meaning
right.
It's an odd time.
Yeah.
It's not the midterms and it's not the presidential election.
Right.
It's an off year.
Yeah, next year we'll have the midterms and
right.
That's when everybody will be watching what's going to swing.
In those elections, these off year elections usually favor the party not in power.
Mm-hmm. And
it's so it's
did
it's,
anything surprise you? Nothing surprised me. Really? The turnout in New York to have 2 million people tells me next year's elections, we're going to have huge numbers showing up. People are motivated now to vote.
And the concerning thing for me, and I will say, Republicans have a tendency not to show up, thinking, we got this.
Mm-hmm. We
you
got it.
You can't do
yep.
it. You cannot do that.
You're going to have to match what everybody else is doing. You're going to have to turn out.
And somebody said, if Sliwa would have gotten out, Cuomo would have won. Well, no. If you break those numbers down, actually, you combine Sliwa's and Cuomo's numbers, they still didn't beat Mondami.
Mm-hmm.
My problem, Mike,
is when Cuomo is your guy. That's the
he's the establishment. He's old. He didn't connect. He never made the point of, okay, I learned that I'm so far left,
mm-hmm.
and he was never conciliatory to any Republican voters at all.
But think about it. I mean, you're being nice. He's a sleazebag.
Well, okay, yeah. Okay.
You're being too nice. He's a sleazebag, and that's the best you're going to give me?
Right.
That's my best choice is a sleazebag or a socialist?
Well, and they were saying, too, the Virginia governor's race, she was a Winsome Sears was a weak candidate.
Yep, absolutely.
She was weak.
I love the winner in Virginia. When she turned to, she's got three daughters, and she turned to one of her daughters and said, this was so cute, who was probably 12, and said, you promised me you were going to clean your room. You haven't cleaned your room yet. And the little girl goes, I'm working on it, Mom. It was so cute.
Coming up, Chief Smith going to be joining us on the follow-up on yesterday's city council meeting. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel. Micah McCarty in studio, Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith. Have you gotten any sleep? Because you haven't stopped since.
Not very much at all.
I know you haven't stopped. You were at the city council meeting for 3 hours yesterday. I know you were on American Ground Radio last night with Louis Avalone and Stephen Parr. And you're here this morning. You've got a meeting at the state fair coming up. Like, you're a busy man.
I'm running off of caffeine out of my centenary college cup.
And he carries eight phones, and all eight of them are blown
right,
up.
Right, right, yes.
Chief Smith. Yes, ma'am. It seems like we meet this way every year, every other year, where we have a kind of a blow up somewhere, and we have to stomp out the fire, and we have to beef up patrols and all that, and come in and find answers. This is not your first rodeo.
No, ma'am.
Are there any new answers to this problem?
Well, you know, we learn from each event. We look at areas constantly, you know, for hot spots. We make our predictions where area-wise where things are subject to happen, and we develop strategies and deploy our resources to attempt to prevent it. And, you know, this past weekend, unfortunately, we were in the area. We were not just at the very spot where violence erupted.
For folks to say, but that's the hot spot. Spring in Texas is the hot spot. That's where you should have been. How do you answer that?
We were there just a couple of hundred feet, if that, away from where that violent erupted, giving assistance to a lady who was found laying in the street at Texas and Market Street, unconscious and unresponsive. So my team was there just couple hundred feet away.
And
we were there.
You probably knew in advance that some of the clubs on those corners weren't going to be open.
That is correct.
On Halloween night.
That is correct.
So your assumption would have been don't need to focus as much attention on that hot spot, if you will.
Yeah, there was some sense of relief, because prior to the violence erupted, there was virtually hardly anyone in that block on the street.
Mm-hmm.
People were inside the venue. I didn't have any idea how many people was inside, but there was not a lot of people outside moving around.
And important that we were just talking about before we went on the air, an important fact that a lot of people might not realize, if you've just seen the video that's posted online on social media, you can see it at keelnews.com. It looks like there's hundreds of people out there throwing fists and fighting and blocking the streets. But if you look from overhead, the real-time crime center cameras, there weren't as many people as you think, were there?
No, looking at ground level, when there's a few people, it can give an illusion of a larger crowd than it really was. I thank our staff so much at the real-time crime center. We had hired back two operators to specifically isolate and watch all of the cameras in the downtown area. And the first alert that a fight was erupted came from the real-time crime center.
I'm glad to hear that, because we had been, probably me, Mike doesn't ever do anything wrong. I've been critical. And yeah, I said, sure, somebody at the real-time crime center needs to be focused on that area,
right,
on specific areas. And it you're was saying they were, and yes, they made ma'am the first call.
That is correct.
That's good to hear.
That is good to hear.
And is that a routine procedure now, that that's what they do every weekend?
We're going to look and see, you know, if that would be a good plan to go. But the crowd that you saw after the fight erupted were not unusual crowds for downtown. Not at all. Not mm-hmm at all.
Heard you talk yesterday, and you were, and there was some mention of maybe we need to pull the 8 to 5 officers off of those jobs and put them downtown, have more officers downtown walking the streets, et cetera. And you made a point that we need to hear loud and clear.
Every bureau that's within the police department has been stripped of their resources to keep the patrol division staffed as best that it can. So if you take away, if we add more in that vein, you're going to take away from some other service that we provide.
You see, a lot of people might not realize that. You're already running thin in other departments mm-hmm to keep patrol as strong as you can.
Fewer detectives to investigate crimes, that's right, burglaries, that's right, murders, rapes, whatever it might be, right?
That's correct. Correct. I hear from each bureau commander every week, I need more manpower. I need more help. I need to fill a vacancy.
Mm-hmm.
And my answer is always, until we can adequately staff patrol, no one is getting anyone other than, you know, a dire emergency situation.
Let me ask you that elephant in the room question. Is getting police officers, is the problem pay, or is it people don't want to be cops anymore?
I think the latter is probably the better answer. Probably maybe 1 out of 50 people that I ask, would you consider joining our team of blue, tell me. And maybe 1 will say yes, and 49 will say, oh, no.
And their reason why is?
Well, you hear multiple reasons. That's not the job for me. It's too dangerous.
No respect.
No respect. I wouldn't last, you know, a week.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and this goes back years. This goes yeah back to prior federal administrations
that
began to villainize the police. So,
and everybody has a camera. And I said to, and I don't know if it was to Corporal Bordelon or another cop that called me yesterday, and I said, if you've got 6 police officers downtown and a couple of hundred people acting a fool, and those 6 officers have to walk in and start breaking that up, somebody's going to throw a bottle at them. Somebody's going to swing a punch at them. And guess what? Those cops are then going to take those people down. And guess what they will have? Video of cops doing their job. And that's when you
police take brutality.
That's when you take the heat. You absolutely need our community and our leaders to stand behind you. When our cops go into a crowd like that, so outnumbered, they're going to have to protect themselves. And then people scream and holler, oh, you're beating up citizens. Why are you doing that? You got to have the support, right?
Absolutely. Many times it won't turn out great. And as police officers, we are making the best attempt to enforce the laws and the ordinances and the rules that society has put in place.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so unfortunate that all of society don't quite see it that way.
Well, and police are called at the worst situation.
Yep.
Police have to, a police officer has to go into an already possibly hostile, violent situation or tense situation and try to either obtain or maintain control of that situation. And when it turns violent, maintaining or obtaining that control is not pretty.
Mm-mm.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Can you stay with us?
Sure.
All right. We've got a couple of big questions for you still to ask.
Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith in studio, Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Shreveport Police Chief Wayne Smith in studio, Mike and McCarty. Chief, we know this happened Halloween night. Now, today is November 5th. We got a comment. Why no arrests? Have we had any arrests? Are we identifying these suspects? And where are we on this investigation?
It's still an active case. It's under investigation. Lots of people involved. So I don't want to say much about it at this point, but just stay tuned. I'm quite sure that more information will come to follow.
But and arrests are imminent if they've not already been made?
Yes.
How many do you anticipate arresting?
I don't know. It was a lot of people involved.
Okay.
And I'm just not sure. The investigators are...
Some of the most disturbing images were the man on the ground, unconscious, and people kicking him in the head.
Mm-hmm.
Is that aggravated assault at that point when you're kicking somebody?
Absolutely. Absolutely mm-hmm. it is. Mm-hmm.
And Absolutely. Was he taken to the hospital? Do we know how he is today? Does anybody have a clue how that young man is doing? Because it looked like he was completely out cold.
He was. And if you notice by the video, I don't know if the video that aired on social media showed it. A car pulled up almost immediately and pulled him in the car and took off with him. Mm. He was not there when we arrived on the scene.
Okay. I did not see that. Yeah.
He was already gone.
Those who are arrested, most of them will be charged with simple assault.
Simple assault, okay, fighting in public.
Okay. There's a question that is always asked of me. I'm sure you hear it too. This, again, 40-plus years for you at this. What is Bossier doing that this is not happening in Bossier? How do you answer that?
I really can't because I don't know a great deal about Bossier's entertainment district. But what I hear about Bossier's entertainment district, it is more family-oriented. It's geared to a different, I guess, level, age level of people.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas our entertainment is more geared toward very, very young people.
You're going to take a position on whether the bar should be closing at 2 a.m., or is that a decision to be made by the council and the mayor?
Yeah, a lot of discussion is going to have to take place to roll that back, you know, by our council and our legislators. I can say that we are going to work as hard as we can to make it the safest environment that we possibly can, no matter what the closing times are.
I can say that it doesn't affect me because I'm not out at 4 in the morning partying. I'm getting up at 4 in the morning as some are still out.
Yes.
But if someone were to ask me, I would say they absolutely need to be closed at 2 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
There's... Again, I'm not 23 years old, so I'm get off the lawn. But there's nothing good that happens at 4 o'clock in the morning.
I tell you what's amazing. Saturday night, I was there, and Sunday morning till 3 o'clock in the morning, and up until midnight, I was wondering where people were. Is the entire downtown shut down? And all of a sudden, after midnight, in the early hours of the morning, that's when I see people began to come.
Let me ask you this, Chief, because you know this like I do. You focus your attention on downtown this weekend. These kids know that. I say kids. Vast majority of them probably are close to 18, grown adults.
Mm-hmm.
They know, and so they move. They relocate to the Fant Parkway, to Ford Park. They're way ahead of you.
Yes, ma'am. That is correct.
How do you keep track of this? Because we're going to have that problem at Ford Park, which is in Councilwoman Bowman's district. We'll have it on the parkway, which I don't know how far down the park. Jim Talaferro's district.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do? I mean, it's like you're chasing your tail.
That is correct.
Playing whack-a-mole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is correct. And, you know, during the summer months, when obviously the days are longer, we do just that. We stay mobile, and where the crowd moves, we move along with the crowd.
But don't, Chief, and I said this yesterday, tell me if I'm wrong. Downtown is different, though.
It is.
It's different, and we have to treasure downtown and protect it because, as Cedric Glover said, you know, as downtown goes, so goes our city.
It's a beautiful spot. It's probably the origin of Shreveport. We have to protect it, preserve it. As best we can.
Mm-hmm.
I agree 100%.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what's the plan for this weekend? Any changes? Anything new?
Absolutely. We are meeting at 9 o'clock this morning, as soon as I leave here, with command staff to go over our plan last weekend and to improve on it for this upcoming weekend with additional strategic locations, more specific assignments. So we'll be working on that at 9 o'clock this morning.
Now, you said y'all on that Friday, on Halloween night, one of the reasons the police were down, you were dealing with a lady that was unconscious in the street. What was that situation, and how is she today?
She was found by police officers that was in that block, I believe. Just a lady laying in the middle of Texas Street at Market Street that was unconscious. So the fire department was called, and obviously...
Was she attacked? Did she just pass out drunk? I mean, what happened?
I'm not sure. All we know that there was a human being laying in the
sure.
street. So obviously that's where our attention was focused on her, because mm-hmm. that's where the situation appeared to be. In policing, we have to serve two roles. We have to be reactive and proactive. We're proactive when time prevents itself to prevent anything from happening, but we have to be reactive to whatever has occurred that's in front of us right now.
One more thing, let's clear up, because Captain Daly was in here last week, and we talked about the
ironically, open, right before all of
yes,
this.
We talked about the open container laws for downtown. Can I bring my own alcohol down there and walk around with it, drinking it up from my cup? That's not legal, is it?
Drinking in public is not legal like that.
Right? If I buy a drink from one of the establishments, I can then walk around in that Red River District with that alcohol.
That is correct.
But if I didn't buy it from one of those establishments, can't bring it in.
No.
Cannot have it in my purse, cannot even bring it into the area.
That's correct.
And that's the law for all around the city, correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Some movement took place some time ago to help us better identify alcohol that had been purchased from the buildings, either with people having wristbands or a particular color cup.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what happened to that conversation, but now it would be difficult to tell, even mm-hmm. down in the Red River District, whether you purchased your stuff from one of the establishments or not.
Mm-hmm.
Chief, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Anytime.
Go get some rest.
Can't do it. Too much
yet.
To do.
There goes his eight phones. They're blowing up again.
Yeah. 9 o'clock. We're talking about this upcoming weekend. And I encourage people to come out, be safe, enjoy our downtown and activity. Have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
Be respectful and be kind.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Chief Wayne Smith in studio, Mike and McCarty. In about 10 minutes, business owner, bar owner, Tim Huck going to be joining us talking about his perspective on yesterday's council meeting. 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
A Shreveport business owner, Tim Huck, was at the city council meeting yesterday. He had some pretty direct thoughts he's going to share with us right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back with more on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, downtown business owner Tim Huck joining us. Tim, you were at Shreveport City Council special called meeting about the violence that took place last weekend. And you made what I thought was a very interesting, very valid point. You've been here for 20 years. Tell us what you told the council yesterday.
Basically, I own several businesses in downtown Shreveport, millions of dollars worth of properties in the city of Shreveport. I pay my taxes. I have business license. I employ people, and I've been assisting in economic development or bringing commerce to Shreveport for over 20 years, and I can't even get them to return an email or a phone call.
Did you get good responses yesterday in your three-minute presentation?
Your time is up, sir.
My big point I was trying to make there was that, you know, you give 50 or anyone else that who you think may possibly come in here and do something eventually as much time as they want, and you bow to them and listen to them, and you don't listen to the guys who are here today doing it. I got a decent response.
much better than I expected.
Councilwoman Ursula Bowman said she'd have coffee with you. You're going to set that up?
Oh, yes, we're. I'm in the process of setting up meetings with Ursula, Tabitha, and after the meeting, Mayor Tom Arsenault said, let's sit down. And so now they're willing to at least listen to some suggestions and ideas, and maybe a person who's actually there seeing what's going on to give them some insight.
How do you sit down with Mayor Arsenault after Monday saying if Arsenault's open his mouth, he's lying. If he's writing, he's lying. I mean, I'm sure he's not your biggest fan.
I'm positive he's not my biggest fan. Don't think he was before I made that statement. But, I think that they realized that let's be honest, election time's right around the corner. They realized that their constituents are tired of seeing these things on the internet. And the fact is, like they brought up before, we had issues in downtown before, not quite as bad as they are now, but we've had issues in downtown before. And I sat with the council and that administration, and we created plans that actually worked. And I didn't get along real well with that council either before we sat down, and we were able to accomplish a lot. And maybe they're going to use some of that, and they realize that I can bring that mindset to the table myself.
Did you hear from the meeting yesterday real solutions or lip service? If you had to say which you heard more of, what was it?
Well, I heard the closest to a real solution I heard, or true statement that I heard, was from the chief of police when he said, guys, if y'all do, they were giving marching orders. Basically, you're going to get down there and enforce the law. And he said he was giving marching orders. And he said, if my officers do this, your phone's going to ring. Mm-hmm. And basically what he's meaning is, if my officers go down and truly enforce the law the way it needs to be enforced, your constituents, your friends, James, your congregation's grandchildren are going to get arrested. Councilwoman, one of your friends is going to be calling you complaining. And he said, if my officers go and do what you're giving me, I'm going to need you to back them up. That was probably the most honest statement that was made yesterday up there. And I'm hoping they all agreed that that was what they were going to be.
Do you think they will back up the police, though? That's typically not happened.
I have to hope for a minute. You may hear me back on here in 3 or 4 weeks screaming. I'm going to sit down with them and make sure that they really do understand what the chief said to them. You obviously know I'm going to hold their feet to the fire. Mm-hmm.
I'm like you. To me, I told Aaron after the meeting, I said, I did hear a lot of pontification, not a whole lot of solutions. But one solution that was brought forth, and I think we spoke to you earlier in the week about this, was going back to closing the bars at 2 a.m., which is something I know you're not a fan of.
Well, not only not a fan of, it would be devastating to all of downtown, and it would hurt downtown buildings. And that's, again, you do that, you still don't enforce the law. The fight just happens earlier, or it happens somewhere else. Mm-hmm. You're still not talking solutions, and you're not talking legit. We didn't move the bar hours because I want to stay up until 6 o'clock in the morning. We didn't move the bar hours for. We moved the bar hours because the casinos opened up and the people started coming out later, or they started staying at the casinos, and it gave us an opportunity to compete. Mm-hmm. In multiple big cities, they have later hours, and the police enforce laws, and they don't have the same issues that we're dealing with right now.
Mm-hmm. Tim, thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. We appreciate you jumping on with us this morning.
Thanks.
Y'all have a good morning. Coming up,
Max Chambers on The Voice, Shreveport teenager. Wait till you hear this.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Kiel.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Kiel.
Well, let's close on a positive this morning. This is 14-year-old Max Chambers, Shreveport teenager, on The Voice, doing Shreveport proud.
Everybody's got a thing, but some don't know how to handle it. Always reaching out in vain, accepting the things not worth having.
Oh. That
is incredible. He was given the first mic drop of the year on the season for this year for this performance. And what that award is, the mic drop award, is given to the performers throughout the season. And he wins the first one, which means he has a chance to ride in the Rose Parade. There'll be one of them picked, I think, November 24th to ride in the Rose Parade and perhaps perform. So, man. And I was wondering, how's he missing school? He attends Caddo Virtual Academy. So we have a virtual high school here in town that he can attend school from while he's out performing on The Voice. And he's a freshman. 14 years old, Mike.
That's awesome.
Listen to that. And you see Snoop Dogg. You can watch the video at KeelNews.com.
Yes.
What an amazing young man. God.
Congratulations. A little something positive from and for Shreveport.
Love to see national attention on our community for great things. And Max Chambers, greatness.
Keep it up.
Mm-hmm.
Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710Keel.com.